You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Yeah.
Okay. 48 hours away from Super Bowl 59, and it seems like the only thing that really could stray from Super Bowl and take people's minds off of it was the NBA trade deadline. I think even 24 hours after the final day, we're still talking about some of the moves and anticipation of Luka Doncic making his Laker debut, same with Anthony Davis. Also some other moves with Jimmy Butler going to Golden State, signing an extension already. And do the Cavaliers do enough at the deadline to top the Boston Celtics from making another run at NBA championship? We'll talk about all that and more right now. Joining us over the phone, as he does each week, we have James Holas. He's our NBA analyst. James, great to get you back on again. Twice in 1 week. I love it. Thank you.
Been a lot to talk about, man. And this has been kind of head-spinning. It's been a dizzying week, so Let's hop in.
Yeah, there's so much to really dissect, and I want to start with the Golden State Warriors because you and I have already talked about the Luka and AD deal, and I know we can bring up the Lakers again here in a moment and talk about another move, but I do want to start with Golden State. Last night, we see this team fall to the Lakers in what was kind of a lackluster game. I mean, I guess it's exciting because you got LeBron and Steph, but I mean, outside of that, I thought it was kind of a boring game last night. Neither of these two teams close to being at full strength. You look at the Warriors and where they are sitting at right now. I do believe they get into the NBA playoffs, or at least the play-in round. I've thought that ever since Sacramento moved off from Fox. I do believe the Warriors will slide in. But did they do enough to actually make waves in the Western Conference? And I think for me, this is the move that I just didn't quite understand, outside of the fact that they needed to do something sitting at 500 right now. Other than that, I'm not a big fan of the Warriors acquiring Jimmy Butler, and I'm curious as to your thoughts.
Yeah, it makes me think of those old video games you used to play where it was like it'd be a level that's timed, but as you're running through the level, you have to jump from like platform to platform, and the platforms collapse behind them. And so if you don't time it just right, if you're not going fast enough, you make the wrong choice, you're going to just free-falling, and you're going to be down a life in the video game. That's what the Warriors are. I feel like it's almost like the plate spinners, right? They're spinning like 10 plates at once. If you miss time one of them, the plates are going to start dropping and breaking. And that's where I feel like the Warriors are. They're at that point where they're up against it. Curry's getting older every day. We watched them. Luckily for them, the trade deadline was going on, and the Luka trade went down because they lost one of the most embarrassing games ever against the Jazz. They were up, I think.
They were up 10 with about 2.5 minutes to play in that game and lost.
Yeah, and it's ridiculous. How do you lose that game? And no one's talking about it. So, yeah, they're a bad team. And they became a slightly less bad team, I guess. Butler's good, but we've seen, and he's going to be rejuvenated, so we might see some actual, like, playoff Jimmy momentum here. You know, he's going to play like him, like a star here to prove to everybody he's back. But Wiggins is also very good, you know. Schroeder wasn't very good, but he's a rotation guy. They definitely, you know, raised their ceiling a little bit, but I think their ceiling, you know, was at this moment was like the play-in. So are they going to be a first-round exit, second-round exit? And is that good enough? You know, but that's where they are.
My biggest question with Golden State, if we just look at it from a depth perspective now, is floor spacing. It looks pretty awful right now, right? I mean, if you're running Draymond at the four, you got Jimmy at the three, I would assume it's going to be Post or Looney at the five, right? I mean, outside of Buddy Hield and Steph Curry, you don't have a ton of floor spacing. I just don't know how this is going to look. I don't know how it's going to work. And I think Steve Kerr has his work cut out for him over the final 32 or so games.
Absolutely. He has to, you know, shoehorn in a pretty big piece with, you know, less than 30 games to go or 30 games to go. And they're supposed to be, you know, against the elite. What are they going to do, right? We know, they're 11th right now.
Yep.
In the West.
Yep.
And I'm going to say, yeah, there's at least, you know, the bottom teams, 11, 10, 11, 8, 9, whatever. But, yeah, there's at least 7-8 teams that are just clearly better than them right now in the West. So, I don't think Kerr has been very flexible. He hasn't been very creative as a coach. And this is going to really tax him here.
Can we appreciate the fact, because I do, so I'm asking you if you can appreciate the fact, and I kind of went off on this yesterday, I give management credit for searching for another star. I mean, it was well reported that they had contacted 29 teams about their elite player to see what it would take to get a deal done. can we at least appreciate the fact that the front office did not sit on their hands? They looked at the fact that they have a generational talent towards the end in Steph Curry, and they said, we got to do whatever we can to make one more run at it, regardless of what they are giving up. I don't know that they gave up too many future pieces, really, when you look at it, right? Did they give up anything that 5 years from now you're going to look back and say, ah, I don't think so. I just don't know how much better they are. So I can appreciate the fact that the front office tried something.
Yeah, you can say that, but then it's like, you know, if you see a parent doing a great job and like they're giving their kid these protein-filled, healthy meals because the kid was malnourished, but that was the same parent that had him malnourished in the first place, right? They could have got Lauri Markkanen in last summer. They could every summer for the last couple of years, they could have made different moves, and even if traded on different years, they could have, and they always, oh, keep our powder dry, let's not do this, and this is where they've been, you know? So, sure, you can give them credit. They did something for doing something. But they didn't have to come into this year, you know, so talent deficient. Not wanting to give up pods for Lauri Markkanen, that's ridiculous. You know, even the deal they have with Kuminga, like if you don't want now, you don't, well, what are you gonna do now, right? Because Kuminga's gonna want to get paid this summer. You're not gonna pay him, so you could have just traded him, and you could upgrade the roster a long time ago. So yeah, or you know, you could have had your second best player or your best defensive player, Draymond, not run off and all-time great in Kevin Durant, you know? So, sure, you give him credit for doing this, but they could have done a lot of other things at other points.
Speaking of Kevin Durant, we'll look at the Phoenix Suns. This team does not have a lot of options, and we knew this was going to be the case, right? When they made the move for Bradley Beal, we knew this was going to be the case. But here they are now, they're a 500 ball club, and, you know, maybe there was some hope that, you know, a big three of Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, maybe it would work. They really can't do anything. Like this is a franchise that is stuck, and really it's unfortunate for them. It looked like they were going to move off from Kevin Durant. I don't know if that would have been I know it wouldn't have improved their situation at least this season. But if you're a Phoenix Suns fan, you might as well just eat it, because this is going to happen for the next couple of seasons. This is a franchise that is just stuck in the mud.
Yeah, and you know, it's almost like the Golden State thing where people want to give credit to their new owner for making a big splash to make these moves, but sure, A for effort, but it, you know, obviously, like we all did see, Bradley Beal is one move too far, and now they, you know, they're in the corner, they're back in this corner, they don't have a lot of assets, they don't have a very good path forward. Beal with that no trade clause is just a franchise crippler. So there's not much they can do other than, I guess, keep moving forward. Kevin Durant, I respect him as a player because he's not trying to run from it. It's on the ownership and management to get creative, I guess. So,
James, if we stick in the Western Conference, I was thinking about this really over the last couple of days. The Lakers in win now mode, and they make the move for Mark Williams. Yeah, they gave up. You know, they had to give up Dalton Kadek. They had to give up a future first round pick. They gave up Cam Reddish, who was whatever. They gave up a little bit to get Mark Williams. But the idea that the Lakers are in win now mode, and they actually got younger. I don't know if I've ever seen a situation to this extent, right? A team that goes in win-now mode, and they actually get more athletic and younger. It's kind of unheard of.
Very much so, and all credit to the GM of the year, which would be Nico, because the Lakers got gifted Luka Doncic. Right. The Dallas GM had a very specific team in mind, player in mind, and luckily the Lakers were that team. The Williams thing, I think he's only played 23 games this year. In the last 2.5 years, he's only played like 80 games. He's been hurt a lot. He's not quite as athletic as people say. He has a great standing reach, though. He's huge, so that's fine. And he hasn't been playing any winning basketball. So this is going to be a crash course for him. Can he go from a looter and the riot in Charlotte, where he was, you know, getting to do whatever kind of they wanted and needed him to do, but, you know, they weren't leading the wins, and now he has to play winning basketball. You know, every night can be a high leverage thing for him. So this will be very interesting to see how he adjusts and adapts.
High leverage games seem to be a little bit easier when you got a guy like Luka, right? I mean, that's the one thing. I think over the course of the history of the league, you can go back and look at players that put up good numbers on bad teams. And there are times where Mark Williams is putting up good numbers on a bad team, right? And so typically someone will overpay for that guy. They expect him to be a first or second option. He doesn't really fill that role. One thing that he does have to his benefit is he gets to play with Luka. And I think that could, in fact, really propel this guy to a top-tier big in the league. I would assume that's Rob Pelinka's hope.
For sure. I mean, can you run? Can you jump? Can you set screens? Can you block a shot or two? That's what they're going to ask him to do, all right? And that he should fit the mold. Let's see. If he can stay healthy, stay on the court. And it is funny because there's a Fat Joe saying, yesterday's price is not today's price. And the minute they saw that Luka went to Los Angeles and they knew they needed a center now, that's why the price for Williams was as high as it was, and that's they had to pay the premium for him. They're definitely in a better place getting him than without having him, but he's such an unproven asset at this level of basketball, right? Let's see if he can adjust. They say defensively, actually, he was pretty bad in Charlotte. Like, I think opponents were shooting like in the mid-50s at the rim, which is terrible for a center of his size and athleticism. So we'll see. We'll see who he really is, right? This is where the rubber meets the road.
We just saw Anthony Davis go off for 42 and 23 against him.
Yeah.
Seriously, that just happened like 2 weeks ago.
So, yes, there's a lot of questions that he will be answering over the next few weeks. We'll see if they gambled on a guy that's very unproven. Let's see if it pays off.
All right, let's talk about the Eastern Conference, and we'll go over and start with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Right now, 41-10. Apparently, they're going to be a player in the buyout market. There's a good chance they are going to add Ben Simmons. I don't know what that necessarily does for this team. But at the end of the day, the Cavaliers did go out. They got themselves a DeAndre Hunter, who is putting up career highs in Atlanta. And I'm going to use the same logic that I just used a moment ago with Mark Williams. You're putting up good numbers on a bad team. Where does that fit in on a good team that has several players that contribute at such a high level night in and night out? I actually like it. I like the trade. I don't believe they gave up a lot. Caris LeVert, Georges Niang, I think they gave up 2 or 3 second-round picks. I don't know that that was a huge premium. If you can get similar production to what he gave Atlanta, which is 19, I'm trying to remember, I think he was averaging 19 points. He was shooting close to 40% or 35%, if I'm not mistaken, from the three-point line, like 40%. Here it is. Yeah, he was shooting 40%. Like, these are good numbers to add to this Cavalier roster. Was this move enough to propel them past the Celtics in the Eastern Conference come playoff time?
Yeah, but this is a case where the big thing about the Cavs was at the back end of the roster, that depth. And they're still deep, right? But Caris LeVert was their kind of designated igniter off the bench. Georges Niang added some toughness, and he's actually, you know, he has some versatility. He can guard fours and some threes, and he brought a little edge to the game. So you gave up both those guys, and statistically, like, it's a wash as far as if you look at the numbers, right? Because he's averaging 19, that's Hunter averaging 19. They sent out about 19, 20 points a game between Niang and Caris LeVert. But now you lost a little bit of optionality, right? A little bit of versatility there. He's not a strong rebounder for his size. As Hunter, he looks athletic and he's long. I think he's 6'8". He looks the part of a traditional wing, a 3-and-D guy. But he's not a strong rebounder. Jason Tatum has torched him and the Jaylen kid in Atlanta. So it's not like he's a defensive stopper. So sure, it's going to help. It upgrades. Again, incrementally, I think, overall, I don't think it really propels them to another level.
Your Celtics, give me your evaluation of how they handled the last 3 days.
It became about money. It's funny because it was very, very calculated, right? Jaden Springer, we haven't seen him all year, and all of a sudden he started getting kind of like key minutes and key points, and he did well. And then he got traded. He got traded because financially, he saves the Celtics, I think, $15 million off on their tax bill, just having him off the roster. Boston is banking that, like you said, I know a lot of people are very high on the Celtics, too. I'm high on them, but I just have a lot of reservations for the way they've been playing.
I still...
They got Torrey Craig.
Yep, exactly. Thank you. Perfect, yep.
And to me, Torrey Craig was huge because I think they needed a little more athleticism and somebody to spell Tatum and Brown off the bench, who wasn't just like Hauser's. He's capable. He's fine, but yeah, the downgrade in athleticism from Brown and Tatum to like Hauser is just a chasm. So they needed somebody to kind of maybe solidify the athleticism off the bench, add a little bit more pop. And I think Torrey Craig might be that. I hate to say this, but buyout guys are almost never the answer, but Torrey Craig might help a lot.
Buyout guys are rarely the answer until they're not, right? Or until they are, I should say. We've seen some buyout guys that have played a factor. I don't know if the buyout guys ever put a team up over the top. I do look at some of the other moves, and I can kind of correlate this back to Boston. What about the Wizards getting Marcus Smart for nothing? Absolutely nothing. They got this guy for peanuts, James.
Yeah, and it's sad because we know how much he meant to the Celtics, and he was actually this guy was the defensive player of the year like just 2 or 3 years ago, right? It's insane how far he's fallen, but I think he's only played like 20 games in the last couple of years. He hasn't played a lot, and you know his style of play, that hard charging balls to the wall way he plays. I'm wondering if that's like it's taking the toll, and he might be, you know, for lack of a better word, he might be cooked. Where, you know, Memphis just gave up 2 firsts, whatever, to get him, and they just gave up a first to get rid of him. And he's in the hinterlands now of the Wizards. So I hope he can maybe get treatment, let his body right, and make one last turn at the end of his career. Would love to see him back in Boston, even off the bench. This is what he meant to us. But it's sad because he really does care about basketball. And, yeah, he looks like he's almost done.
Yeah, what you just said in Boston, coming off of the bench, that is something that could prolong Marcus Smart's career and his relevancy, right? I mean, going to a team like Boston, leading a second mob out of the backcourt, like that is something that I think could prolong his relevancy in the NBA.
And let's be real. I'm going to say it. He will never be relevant again, right? I don't think he'll ever be a key component on a high-level team again. So even just bringing them back for Santa Maria in Boston and letting him, you know, be the mascot, for lack of a better word. I mean, I feel sad even talking about it. Let's move on. Next topic.
All right. Who won the trade deadline, James?
It's got to be the Lakers. When you bring in a top-five guy, you lose your top 10 to 12 guy, but you bring in a top-five guy who's he's not even entered his prime yet, and now he has all the motivation in the world to get his body right, and even, you know, more. He's a competitor. He's a crunch time shot maker, and yeah, you just added him. You just extended the Lakers relevance for another decade or so. So it's got to be the Lakers, hands down.
Is it enough for them to get to the NBA Finals? I believe it is. If Luka and LeBron can mesh together, I like this line. I don't see any gaping holes within this roster. I'm not saying it's a perfect roster, but I don't see any gaping holes. And that was a problem, right, just 2 weeks ago. We could look at this roster and say there were obvious holes that they could try to fix. That was before we thought, like, logically, if I'd have told you 2 weeks ago they were going to land Luka for AD, you'd have laughed at me and probably never came back on the show again. But the fact is, after the trade deadline, you look at it, yeah, there's really no gaping hole in this roster anymore.
I still think they need more shooting, and, you know, then outside of this unproven center, there's still no real bigs, right? No one's scared of Jackson Hayes.
No.
And, of course, when you can have overwhelming offense with Luka and LeBron, 48 minutes of either one of those guys on the court, you're going to be, you know, you're well set up. I still think the defense might be a problem, right? Because now Luka's another target. Reeves being targeted. Sure, Finney Smith's big upgrade and Vando being back helps, you know, but that's you still have the issue of you'll be having a trade-off with who's on the floor, right? You're like, all right, you don't have a lot of two-way guys, is what I'm saying. So, this is where JJ is going to have to make his money, right? And scheme and make sure his rotations are set where he masks these deficiencies.
It is amazing that this franchise kind of has a future. I don't feel like they had one a couple of weeks ago, but they do now. Okay, so you talk about the Lakers winning the deadline. Who was a big loser at the deadline?
It's got to be their trade partner, Dallas. And this is not saying that that Anthony Davis is dog food, right? He's a really good player. So if Nico, everything he says, you know, it doesn't make sense, but at least by his logic, he worked out as best he can. But you just gave up your future, your 25-year-old franchise guy, and you just cut your runway down to about 2 or 3 years, right? Because Kyrie and AD probably have a 2 or 3 year window of a high level play with AD as old as he is now. So, I just, again, we're gonna scratch our heads about it as we watch it play out. They're still gonna be good, but they definitely set their franchise back in Dallas.
And lastly, before I let you go, I know we're running a little long on the segment. This is okay. We'll talk about the Utah Jazz. I am a little bit surprised that Walker Kessler, Jordan Clarkson, Colin Sexton are all still wearing Utah Jazz uniforms. And I bring this up with you because with as closely as you follow the Celtics in the lead, you've kind of seen this, right, with Danny Ainge. Should Jazz fans be concerned that those three are still a member of this team when we know there was a market out there for them?
Yeah, I mean, this has become the Danny Ainge special, right? The load up on all these assets, and then that was the deal. I'm not going to pull the trigger, and like I don't get it. I don't get it. Same thing with Cam Johnson in Brooklyn. Like you got these guys, you have obvious pieces that could have brought you some kind of haul back for who they are, and you just don't do it. I don't understand it. Maybe, I guess you got to give him to this summer, but yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
I have to believe that the Jazz could have pulled the trigger, got rid of Walker Kessler, and in return got a first-round unprotected pick and Dalton Knecht. I have to believe that deal was on the table.
It had to be, right? Because, I mean, I would much rather have Ryan Kessler than Williams, because at least Kessler's been like, he's a proven track record,
mm-hmm.
right? And the shot blocking's real, so I don't understand it.
James Holis, again, always kind enough to join us. James, love getting the trade analysis from you. Love talking NBA. Doing it twice this week was great, especially ahead of the Super Bowl. Of course, before I let you go, where can we find more of you?
I wish we had talked before Celtics' embarrassing loss to the depleted Dallas Mavericks last night. But just on X and where the sky is blue, at Snotty Drippin, it's homage to the great player and weird post-career guy, Scottie Pippen. So I just talk basketball and nonsense over there.
James, I always look forward to the conversation. Thank you so much.
You're the man, bro.
And with that, we are out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We're going to be back to do it again on Monday. We'll recap Super Bowl 59. Don't forget, live coverage is going to begin on Sunday at 12 o'clock all day long leading up to kickoff. And then Westwood One will handle the play-by-play for you right here on KOAL. I'm going to be on the road tonight. We have some Emory High School basketball. That's coming up at 6:30. Until then, be safe. I am out.